Good afternoon, I'm Khaki Walton. Checking on the arts is made possible by contributing listeners and the Orpheum Theater. Gallery 1091 at the WKNO Digital Media Center, sponsored by Century Wealth Management, presents The Time Catcher, photographs by Karen Pulfer Folk. That's going to be up through July the 30th, and there's an artist reception Sunday, July the 19th from 4 until 6 p.m., and I'm urging everybody to come to the artist reception because, listen, Karen's a storyteller, and she's got a lot of stories to tell about the pictures that are hanging in our gallery right now. Some wonderful things from her years as a photojournalist, and she's embarking on a new set of photographs that focus on the South, because everybody loves seeing images of the places that we're around every day. You probably know her from her award-winning work at the Commercial Appeal. She was a staff photographer there for about 26 years. She's currently self-employed as a photojournalist. Her photographs have been featured in all kinds of national publications like Time and Newsweek and Rolling Stone, People, Sports Illustrated. And I want to read a quote from one of her former colleagues, David Waters, the columnist at the Commercial Appeal. He talks about her photographs and says it's not just her artistry at work here, it's her empathy. She sees with her heart, and when we look at her photographs, so do we. Karen Pulfer Folk joins me in the studio this afternoon. Good to see you.
Thank you, Khaki.
Well, you hung this morning. We're taping this a little bit early, and I've got to say, some of the images I was familiar with, but some are brand new, and it was just so great to take a look at everything. I want to talk to you about a quote that you have in your artist statement. You refer to yourself as a storyteller who happens to use a camera.
So a lot of people think photography, but really photojournalists are very different than art photographers, from fashion photographers. We do a little bit of everything, but the main thing that's included in what we do that's different is we're visual storytellers. Mm-hmm. So if I take a beautiful picture and I'm working for a publication, most of the time if it doesn't tell a story, nobody wants to see it.
Right.
So that's been liberating, working for myself and creating art. I'm taking pictures just because they're beautiful and just because I want to put beautiful things out into the world. But for my 26 years as a photojournalist, I would have to go out and the stories, the pictures that I would tell had to illustrate the stories or the feature of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a priority over how beautiful they were. And of course, you always want to have a beautiful photograph that tells a story. That would be the optimum goal. But sometimes you have a picture that's not as beautiful, but it communicates the story. Other times you have a beautiful picture that doesn't tell the story, but you ultimately want a beautiful picture that tells the story.
Well, and a picture may not be quote-unquote beautiful, but you capture a moment in time, and that could be from a tragic circumstance or something that just, that's, it's very moving. I mean, you capture sometimes people who are undergoing difficult things. That's why they're ending up in the paper. It's a story.
Right.
And you have to go to some difficult locations, see some people undergoing difficult circumstances.
Well, and you know, that's one of the things that it kind of haunts me as a photojournalist, because when you do this as long as I've been doing it, is you realize that there's like fleeting moments all around you, mm-hmm. every day. And photographers, you know, usually are given that gift to kind of see those fleeting moments. And it's the skill, you know, the gift part is what you see. The skill part is capturing those fleeting moments, which most of the pictures in the exhibit that are extraordinary were in a blink of an eye. I mean, you know, it's kind of like when we photograph hockey. If you see the puck, you've missed it. I mean, it's that fast. And that's most of the time what makes the extraordinary pictures. The mother giraffe with the baby giraffe.
Oh.
That was a fleeting moment. That is one frame. You know, I have all these frames that good, better, best, you know, but that was the best. I mean, that was extremely fleeting moment. The little girl with Santa Claus where she's closing her eyes.
That is the sweetest thing, and I actually had that on my phone.
Aww.
And I showed somebody the other day, and I said, look at this sweet thing.
Yeah,
I
mean, that's one of my more popular images.
Yeah.
So that was a fleeting moment as well. So, you know, those, and that's really, it takes a lot of skill. As a news person, you might go out and they might say, this is what the story is. And then you go out and you're trying to capture a beautiful picture, a fleeting moment that tells the story.
Well, you made that reference to it, the hockey puck.
Yes.
And I love this in your artist statement. You equate what you do to hunting or fishing.
No, it really is like that. And it's kind of really another good example is it's kind of like golf. You know, I mean, I kind of do. I spend most days, often we didn't get assignments and we were out hunting, you know, trying to find a great picture. You're fishing, talking to people, trying to find out what's going on in the community, what's going to translate and into the newsroom. But it's also kind of like golf, whereas you go out and, you know, a lot of times you're hitting the ball, and a lot of what we do is very routine.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like golf, if you, you know, hit one out of the sand trap and it goes in the cup, that keeps you coming back over and over. And so the exhibit is kind of more those pictures from 25 years. I take a lot of stuff that's just okay, but these are the extraordinary pictures, kind of like that extraordinary golf shot, the hole in one.
Well, I'll tell you what's extraordinary. This, and I was showing Daryl Snodgrass this picture, and I commented on it, and he went, "You're right. You have a picture of Billy Lee Riley at a Bob Dylan concert."
Yes.
And it's, I swear to you, I think it's the only time I've ever seen Bob Dylan smile in a picture.
Yes. That is you're not the first person that's ever said that, and that's one of my favorite stories. And two of the pictures that are featured in the exhibit are Paul McCartney with Carl Perkins, mm-hmm. and Bob Dylan with Billy Lee Riley. I used to do album covers a lot, and I'm kind of doing them again, but early before my kids were born, I used to do that. And so Billy Lee Riley, I was working on his album cover, and we became very close. He's passed away since. But so he said to me, he used to tell me all the time that Bob Dylan loved him. Bob Dylan loved him. Bob Dylan was, you know, says he's his hero. So one day he says to me, "Bob Dylan's coming to town and he wants me to come see his show. Do you want to come with?" So I'm thinking, okay. And, you know, I'm thinking maybe at best we'll get a brush by backstage or something, but I had to do it. And because I do love music. Music is a big passion of mine. So we went, and, I mean, the best case scenario played out, which is what I always hope for. You know, everything Billy said was true and accurate. Bob Dylan was so enamored with him. We went on Bob Dylan's bus, sat down, and I listened to Bob Dylan go, "Oh, you know, Billy, how did you do this and how did you do that? And I remember when I was a teenager laying on my bed listening to your music, and show me how you did this riff." And
oh, God.
He was just absolutely enamored with Billy. And so then as the concert started, he brought Billy on stage. Billy had, you know, been a house painter when I met him and really always wanted his due. Jerry Lee Lewis got a lot of the push. And so Billy had a couple of big hits, but what ended up happening was he didn't become as big of a star as he had hoped. And I think that always upset him.
Yeah.
So Bob Dylan really did actually bring him up on stage. And you're right, that was the one picture of him smiling. He was so happy to be playing, and Billy was so happy to be playing, and they had their arms out, and it was just really a true moment in music history and in Memphis music history, and one that kind of was really under the radar until just very recently, other than me telling people this story. Bob Dylan just recently was given an award this spring, and he brought that up about meeting Billy Riley and about how important that was to him and how significant that was to him. And so I thought that was pretty neat because I was right there.
You were right there.
And so I love to tell that story in conjunction with Paul McCartney and Carl Perkins, because as someone, I came from Chicago, but during those years, when I first came to Memphis, all these Memphis musicians were around, and they are all the people that went on to inspire these greats.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't know Billy Lee Riley. They don't know Carl Perkins. They don't know a lot of these people that were kind of in that, that didn't quite have the star power that Bob Dylan and Paul McCartney had.
Yeah, like back in the day, Furry Lewis and people like that.
Yes,
you know?
So all these people in the region who went on to inspire the greats. Ann Peebles. I remember Ann Peebles playing at the Peabody.
Yeah.
And Michael Bolton had sold out at the Pyramid, you know. Same kind. It's just, I saw it over and over and over. And so I was doing an album cover for Johnny Rivers and got to know Carl Perkins a little bit. And when Paul McCartney came to town, I was looking for him to get a newspaper picture. And long story short, Carl Perkins, I actually was lucky enough to take a right instead of a left out of the newspaper, went down Beale Street, and sure enough, there was Carl Perkins walking up the street.
Oh, my God.
And I said, "Carl, I know that Paul McCartney's a fan of yours. Do you have any idea where he is? I want to get a picture for the newspaper." And he said, "Well, I don't know where he is right now, but I'm going to be playing with him tonight for his concert, and can I hire you to come on in and take pictures?" And I was like, "Well, let me see, you know, let me check my calendar on that one." But that was really one of the highlights of my life.
Oh my gosh!
And getting to be up close, because I am a huge Beatles fan.
Oh yeah.
So, and I was, but again, it was that same scenario playing out, is where you had Paul McCartney, who was just enamored with Carl Perkins, held him in such esteem and such respect.
And you see that look on his face when he's looking over at Carl, and you can see that he's idolizing this guy, that this is his teenage dream come true.
Exactly. I love it. Me, those two pictures just really, you know, really say it all for, you know, Memphis music and the impact they made in the world. I mean, those two pictures, they're authentic news pictures that I feel like are really significant in music history.
Well, you know, there's another photograph of yours, and this is from your days as a photojournalist, not at the Commercial Appeal, but somewhere else. You took a picture, and it's of a homeless man and his cat.
Oh, yes, right. So he wasn't technically homeless, but he was close to homeless. He was living in a real shack and loved his animals. And that's one of my favorite stories, too, because he, you know, those are the kind of things that I've fought for years to get in the newspaper. Newspapers don't really like that kind of thing as much. It wasn't newsy enough for them. But mm-hmm. a lot of what I shot that readers love the most was never newsy enough for the newspaper. And somehow I'd get lucky enough to slide it in. That was an example of this little man I found who lived in this shack that was decrepit and falling apart, and he was surrounded by all these animals, and you could tell he hardly had enough food for himself, but he would feed these animals and love these animals, and there's this little interaction between him and this kitty that, you know, you can see just this unconditional love that these animals give him. So I tried like crazy to get that story in the newspaper, and the editors weren't that interested until one day a huge ad fell out. And this is the way the newspaper business goes. And they said, you know, that story you've been working on, because I'd been working on it forever. I mean, when I get a hold of something, I usually don't let go. They said, we have all this space. Does anybody have anything to put in it? And I said, I got this little story over here. But the funny thing was, we put together a beautiful layout. It was a whole big photo spread because this big ad had fallen. And when that story ran, and it wasn't even a story. It was a photo essay with cut lines because we didn't even have time to do a story at that point. The phones rang off the hook. I mean, it was the first time as a rookie that I really experienced the power of journalism, because the phone rang for, you know, days and days and days. And the community really came out and took care of Hank the rest of his life.
Oh, my
Which, I mean, to this day, it still gives me goosebumps, you know. I think, you know, they came, they fixed his roof and put curtains up and cleaned him up and brought food for him and food for his animals. And really, that continued until the day he died. And that really showed me at a young age how powerful what we do can do. And the readers do pay attention. And ironically, most of the time, the stuff that gets the community out and gets the community writing me letters and gets them excited is often stuff that's difficult to get in the paper.
That's right.
It's not the politics. It's not the school board. You know, it's not the standard news of the day. It's, you know,
it's a human interest.
It's human interest, and it's the stuff I see with my heart that in reality really isn't a huge news story, but what we do is tell stories about each other. I mean, we tell stories about each other and the people in the community, and I think that that's an important thing for us to get to know our neighbors.
It's that empathy thing that David Waters was talking about.
That's true. I have empathy to a fault. It's one of the reasons I'm kind of taking a little breather from really difficult journalism at this point, because it wears me out.
Well, now there's some pictures that you just took, I think, for the pure joy of taking them. And one of them, I thought, wait a minute, did she like fool with how she developed this picture? I wasn't sure. It's a tugboat in the mist in the Mississippi River.
Yes. Okay. So when I shoot journalism, and we might have touched on this last time we talked, the journalism is absolutely authentic, straight moments mm-hmm. of time, fleeting moments that I capture, mm-hmm. Which is where the time capture comes from. Really, most of my photography is that. But when it comes to photojournalism, you never mess with anything.
Right.
You don't set it up. You don't tone it funny. You don't do anything like that. Well, since I've been creating art and trying to put more beauty out into the world, to answer your question, the tugboat, I did tone a little bit to make it a little bit more artsy. And that's a new picture in the exhibit. I just got off of, I was a week on the American Queen, and I did a big photo essay for Memphis Magazine that's going to run in the August edition, an 8-page spread is what I understand. And so while we were on the American Queen run from Memphis to New Orleans, there was one afternoon when the skies opened up. and just poured. Like, you couldn't even hardly see in front of you.
Oh, my gosh.
And when I looked out, I saw this little tugboat and this bridge behind it and making it through the rain. And I thought it was a beautiful picture. And so really all I did was enhance it. I turned it just, it was kind of gray and it just looked a little bit flat.
Uh-huh.
So I did use some photo software to kind of make it a little richer. It's kind of a little more of a dark blue tone.
Mm-hmm.
But so the moment's authentic. It was really a storm. I didn't add fog or any of those things. I just kind of enhanced the texture a little bit. And
it's
the
haunting.
It is. I love it, though. It's very different from anything else I've ever done. You know, and that's, I really am having fun just creating things because they're beautiful, because I realized as a photojournalist, I would pass by those things because I knew the newspaper wouldn't use it if it didn't really have a storytelling value or news value. Now I'm kind of liberating myself to stop and just take pictures just because they're pretty, just cause. And they may never make an exhibit. I do put them on my blog a lot at KarenPulferFolk.com. Sometimes I just take them just for that, or for Instagram, or for Facebook. It's nice to be able to take pictures and not worry about, you know, that's one of the nice things about social media is it doesn't have to get through the gatekeepers, the editors. I can just put it out there just because I saw it and I want to share it with you.
Well, people can see the photographs that you're sharing with everybody in this exhibit. It's great. And there's some nature photographs. And I'm thinking, okay, how long did you have to sit by that flower to catch that butterfly?
Yeah, and that is really true. I mean, that's what people don't realize. And that's the part that hurts when we joke, like with my kids, about people just right-clicking and stealing images off the internet and those kinds of things. Because almost all of my work, I mean, it's a fleeting moment, but I may be positioning for 3 or 4 hours for the right fleeting moment.
Oh, my
Yes, gosh. I remember shooting the butterfly with the sunflowers, and that is at Shelby Farms.
Uh-huh.
And, yes, I sat out there forever waiting for just the right, you know, light, just the right butterfly, just the right position. It seems like it's very simple, but it's really not. Most of the time when you do a really good job, you make it look easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people don't have any idea. It's not uncommon at all for me to position 2, 3, 4 hours for a photograph. You know, I try to set myself up for success. And, you know, this to me is kind of more of a divine thing. You know, I can show up with a camera and I can have my gift to see and all those things. But if something special doesn't happen on the other side, you know, I can't make that happen. Now, other photographers are different than me where they orchestrate images and they do make things happen. But that's not my style. My stuff is more authentic and I pretty much, you know, wait for things to unfold in front of me.
Well, one great thing that I think you're doing, and you're very generous to do that, is that when the proceeds from the sale, because all of the photographs in the exhibit are for sale, but this is a fundraising effort, too.
Right. So, yes, WKNO is going to get a percentage of the proceeds, and some of the photojournalism is not for sale, but the bulk of the work that's on the wall is for sale, and if you buy it, the money's going to go to a good cause. Several people, there's several popular images, Sunset Over Dixie, a sunset over cotton field. Mose Vinson's hand is a great shot for, yes.
That's
great.
An incredible.
That's one of the most popular ones. Paul McCartney is actually for sale, and that's a popular one. There's all kinds of them out there that are nice. Some are more artsy. Some are more, you know, documentary.
Well, the exhibit is great, and you also have some note cards for sale with images.
Yeah, so that's been kind of a fun thing. Is since I've been exhibiting, I started to create note cards just for people who couldn't afford a bigger piece. They'd have a little something to take home, and that has really taken off. And so I have note cards here for sale. I have them around town. Booksellers is carrying them. Mm-hmm. The Trolley Stop is carrying them. Alley Cat Arts is carrying them. And the zoo carries some, too. So, yes, that's kind of a little growing side business for me that I'm really enjoying. I mean, people seem to really love to have a little piece of art that they can share with their friends for not so much money.
Well, I love it. And when you send somebody a note, you're sending it to somebody that lives in another city. You're sending them a piece of Memphis, and you're sending them your art to a
exactly.
friend. And art's the best gift anyway.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, in this day and age of everything being digital and Insta this and Facebook that, and there are people that really kind of enjoy that quality snail mail, you know, getting a letter. And especially, I did was working on some gift pack cards and stuff, and I think the older women really who are in that habit of sending notes and thank yous. But they're just nice. Yes, it's just a nice little piece of art that you can share.
Well, the Time Catcher is Karen Pulverfolk, and her work is on exhibit at Gallery 1091 here at the WKNO Digital Media Center through July the 30th. Again, the artist reception is Sunday, July the 19th from 4 until 6. If you're not able to make the artist reception, you can see her work Monday through Friday. Business hours are 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. And if you need info on anything else about the exhibit that we haven't told you today, which I can't imagine that happening, I think we pretty much covered everything. But if you need directions on how to get to our studios in Cordova or anything else, just call 458-2521. Also, there's information on the Channel 10 website, and that's WKNO.org. And go to Karen's site, KarenPulverFolk.com. That's Karen Pulver, FOCHT.com. And you can see images there and look at your blog and everything. Well, Karen, it's been such a treat to have you back. Thanks so much for chatting today.
Thank you for having me.